Hey, this is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and I have a really great episode. It is with Jack Timmons from Jack's Barbecue in Seattle, Washington. Yes, Seattle, Washington. I've been wanting to talk to him for a long time, and also wanted to wish everyone a Happy New Year. Happy 2020. Hope it's a great one for you guys. I've been away for a bit. I've been sick for a few weeks and haven't had the opportunity to finish editing this as well as a bunch of other ones. But know that there is a lot of great stuff, including this interview, coming. I'm going to be editing like a madman, so expect 2 to 3 per week. This one with Jack is really special. It starts off with a Jeff Bezos story because, of course, Amazon is up in Seattle. So, of course, those guys would have to, if they like barbecue, go to Jack's Barbecue. He went to Texas A&M for software engineering. He wasn't going on the path of barbecue. He went to San Diego to work on the space program, went up to Seattle, worked at Boeing, spent some time in Brussels, but it was his time when he went to barbecue summer camp way back in the day, met Daniel Vaughn, got inspired, went to a bunch of barbecue joints in Texas, came back to Seattle, thought, you know what, I want to replicate this. Talked to Daniel Delaney, who I hope to someday have on the show. He was at the forefront of barbecue pop-ups and this barbecue movement back before this barbecue movement started. He had a thing called Brisket Laboratory, and Jack explains that I had kind of forgotten what it was. And you're going to be really interested in learning about that because it's an interesting concept, and he replicated that. Talked to Daniel, replicated that. He also replicated a lot of what Rodney Muirhead did in Portland, because he kind of was on the exact same path as this guy, replicated what he did. You're going to love this as we talk about all of his locations. He has 3 locations. He smokes 4 to 5 tons of meat per week. He has breakfast tacos now. We talk about his schedule. His second location is by Amazon, Microsoft, and Google. His third location is in the Columbia Tower, the tallest building in Seattle. Talks about ghost restaurants, which is super interesting. He's a super interesting, engaging guy. You're going to really love this. And I'm super excited to have AJ's Custom Cookers on board as a sponsor for the YouTube show and podcast. I've gotten to know AJ Ramirez over the last year since I interviewed him for the show, and I couldn't be more proud of his progress professionally. But more importantly, I'm honored to call him a friend. He's a stand-up guy, super passionate about his craft and barbecue. It's a hardworking family man, fabricating and welding for 27 years, and founded AJ's Custom Cookers 11 years ago. He specializes in custom TIG, heliarc work, fancy metal, stainless, copper, aluminum, brass. You could do pretty much anything, but where he really thrives is unique designs, and his company name says it all, custom. He's custom, custom, custom. If you have an idea, AJ can bring it to life. And interestingly enough, he's been brought in on more than one occasion to fix a pit that someone else has built that has had issues. He comes in, he could do that. So if that's something you need, one new item he's recently been working on is a new live fire table. He's developed with a few different accessories. You can see all that at his website at ajscustomcookers.com. There's a link in the show notes. I'll put all that link to everything, all the social media. He wants to promote that live fireside more. You can contact him via phone. His phone is right there on his website. He's quick to respond, email, social media. He's always been fast for me. A few of the well-known guys that he's worked with are Derek Walker, Smokeaholics, Joe Zavala, Zavala's Barbecue, Chris at Panther City Barbecue. His current lead time is 12 months, but again, you could chat with him and get a better handle on the time frame. It all depends on the specific. And just so you know, I have a cooker on order. So he's not only a sponsor, I am a client of his. But again, I'm really excited to have him on board. You'll learn more as the episodes go by about different things that he can do. I think you'll be really interested in what he's doing. As I mentioned before, there's a lot of cool stuff happening in 2020. So subscribe if you're not subscribed to the podcast or the YouTube channel. If you're just listening to this on the podcast, check the YouTube channel out. Tons and tons of stuff, as well as the visual for this interview, the person that I'm speaking with. That's available at youtube.com/kevinsbbqjoints. I have a website at kevinsbbqjoints.com, which is going to be retooled, and it's exciting. The next couple weeks, it's going to be amazing. You're going to really love it. Really great resource. It's going to be a lot of cool stuff. You're going to find yourself, I think, spending a lot of time there. I'm available on social media at Kevin's BBQ Joints. But at the end, thank you guys for listening. Thanks so much. Enjoy this.
Funnily, Jeff Bezos comes into the restaurant and eats, and he's a good old boy.
Really?
I started talking barbecue with him, and I'm like, what do you know about barbecue? And he said, hey, I grew up in Texas. Like every summer, I lived on a ranch in West Texas with my grandparents and rode horses and baled hay. And I was, you know.
Oh, that's cool.
It is cool. Yeah, he just had a couple of cocktails and eat barbecue with his family. It was super like right. normal.
Nice. Like, can I keep that little portion in there? I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
It humanizes someone that's like, people don't ever get a chance to see Jeff Bezos in real life. And you do.
Right.
You grew up in Texas, right?
Yeah, I grew up in Dallas, Texas.
Okay.
In the 60s and 70s, and moved to the West Coast after school. I went to Texas A&M and studied engineering and got into software. And I worked in San Diego on the space program. Then I worked in...
Oh, I didn't know that.
Came up on Seattle with a job at Boeing, working on 747-400 avionics.
How was that?
It was kind of slow. I mean, big companies like that, their product cycle takes like 10 years to make an airplane. And, you know, you're working on code that three other programmers worked on, you know, while you were, by the time you got to it, you know, and it was, yeah, it was, I went, actually the aerospace industry was kind of winding down. I went to graduate school in Brussels. Boston University had a little MBA program.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I got to drink beer and pretend I was being ambitious.
And then, I've always wanted to live in Brussels for a year. It just sounds like something idyllic.
It is like really good food, but, you know, non-pretentious. It's not like France where everybody's aware of their brilliance. You know, it's just very humble, but super delicious. And the beers, I mean, that little country had 500 kinds of beers.
That's crazy.
Made by monks for 300 years or whatever. It was.
Do you think that changed the way you perceive beer? Like, do you still totally. Have those? Yeah, I'm sure you still think of beer in the same way that you enjoyed it then.
Yeah, I mean, their beers were so complex and interesting that, yeah, it became a thing. Like, it used to just be, give me a beer, you know, and I was not that snobby. It was kind of, that was in the early 90s, and there were better beers than Budweiser at that time, of course. We were starting to drink them, but it wasn't like 1,200 IPAs when you walk into a bar.
Yeah, not to the extent today. It's so crazy.
Right, it's out of control now, and they taste a little similar to each other these days. You know, I can't tell the difference in most IPAs anymore. There's so many of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just kind of too bitter for me almost. I've kind of moved back to the softer pilsners. And
I think a lot of people go that route. They'll try a bunch of funky sours and different things, and then they'll kind of weave their way back to
yeah.
like a pale ale.
Yeah.
Or a lager. Yeah. Exactly. So in Brussels, did you go back to Texas, or did you come back to the West Coast?
Back to Seattle. And I, you know, had a kid and settled down and bought a house and worked at Microsoft for 13 years.
Two of the companies we named at the beginning.
Right. Big companies. I'm a big company guy. I was a big company
guy. You
were,
yeah.
I always had a little barbecue pit in my backyard. And, you know, they start small and they get bigger and fun. I tell people all the time, barbecue pits are like boats and motorcycles. You always want another one and a bigger one.
That's true. That's so true. That's so true.
And I wish I kept them all, because I have a nice little... you know, history museum of barbecue pits, from little bitty ones, electric, yeah. to the first stick burner, to the big offset, to the one your wife doesn't want in the backyard anymore, you know.
that's a good advice for someone listening to this or watching this that's just starting out. Save all those along the way.
That's right. Yeah, one day you'll have a museum. And then 7 years ago, I discovered, and I started on the internet, on Twitter and whatnot, following Daniel Vaughn.
Yeah.
He was a barbecue snob, like yeah. everybody did, right?
Mm-hmm.
And amazing ribs. And I was all of a sudden learning, you know, the different cuts of the brisket and the fatty versus the moist. I grew up eating barbecue all my life, but it wasn't that, you know, nobody was that into it. It mm-hmm. was just barbecue. It was like a chicken fried steak. You just ate it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And the barbecue places, nobody was famous. It was just, they didn't even have names. It was like the one on Garland Road or mm-hmm. the one, you know, Buckner Road, that's where you ate barbecue.
Yeah, and it was like a rib joint, or it was like a place that you got meat.
Right.
And it wasn't craft, or it wasn't the way that people are looking at it nowadays.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there was Dickie's, and we ate there too, but it
yeah.
Dickie's started in Dallas, and they weren't like...
Well, that's true, it did, yeah.
2 million of them like there are today, you know. And so Daniel Vaughn, and he mentioned barbecue summer camp, and I went, what? And so I immediately applied
Texas A&M, right?
And went to barbecue summer camp in the meat sciences department.
Oh, that's so great. Yeah, I want to do that for sure.
You have to. And you have to start applying now, because everybody in the planet wants to go there. So it takes you a few years to get in.
Yeah, I tried to get into brisket camp, which is this January, and I got denied this year.
Right. You should keep applying.
Yeah, I will. I won't stop.
The more you apply, the more they increase your score level in terms of the lottery.
Yeah, there's something that Jeff Sava was saying. It's some kind of, like algorithm they figure out.
Right.
It makes it fair. I think it makes it more fair for people.
It's really fair. And I can't, like, I went there, and I went to Texas A&M as an undergrad, and my brother, who studied agricultural engineering, had a class with Jeff Sable, you know, beef 101 or meat sciences 101 or something like that. And I thought, you know, if anybody, so friends or acquaintances in Seattle will ask me, hey, can you put a good word for me at barbecue summer camp? And I did that once or twice, and they just replied like, oh, you have no idea. Like, we get 10,000 people applying or whatever it is.
Yeah, from all over the world now.
Right.
But when you applied, did you just apply and get in?
Yeah, I went to the second one. So that was eight years ago. And I joined. You have a higher probability of getting in if you join the Texas Foodways Historical Society, mm-hmm. which I'm a lifetime member of now. I love it. They have the best annual symposiums. And like, they had one in Austin about barbecue. They had one in San Antonio about the history of Tex-Mex, one at Texas A&M all about agriculture, one in Houston about Gulf Coast seafood and everything.
And they have ones about wine, and yeah, it's so.
Yeah, and they have these great speakers, and they have chefs, and it's just like, wow, it's like the best foodie event ever, and you learn so much. You know, you learn about the history of things and whatnot. It's my favorite thing to do.
Yeah, I need to, I get those emails, and I'm just not, I'm landlocked here in Los Angeles for a little bit, but I definitely want to start going to the symposiums, because they look phenomenal. Not just the barbecue ones, like you said, the other ones look great.
Yeah, they're totally cool. And while I was at barbecue summer camp, that was a half a week. They had another half week class called Beef 101.
Ah, you did that.
Yeah, and that was for industry professionals. And people from, you know, all over the world, Latin America and Asia and Europe, were there to learn about the beef industry in America, because they were big buyers for, you know, big service industries back home. So we did a little more knowledge about that industry and learned about the cattle herd and how that all works and the processing. And I learned things like 80% of the beef we eat in America comes from ranches with 50 head of cattle or less.
Wow, that's phenomenal. I didn't know that.
Yeah, because you think of big ranches.
Of course.
There are big processing plants where they all end up, but it's all, you know, 20 acres and a mule kind of history of America. And that's why when you get a box of briskets, they're never the same. It's not like Arkansas chickens where they're identical, right?
True.
They've got like one set of DNA they're using for every.
That's so sad. It's so true.
If they even come out of eggs anymore, I don't even know.
Yeah, they might just go straight to the bag. They're born in the bag, and then they.
but beef is different, you know, and that's why when you're cooking briskets, you know, they all have their own personality. Mm-hmm. They're raised differently. Even we get our beef from a single provider, Double R Ranch.
Okay.
In Eastern Washington, they're super high quality, but they have subcontractors. You know, they do the genetics. And they have the, you know, the sperm from mm-hmm. the steer. They share it with their subcontractors who grow the cattle and sell them back to Double R Ranch, who processes them. So our briskets are a little more consistent.
Yeah, but you still need to trim them.
Beef 101 was cool. And then, so I was a week in college at Texas A&M.
That's awesome.
And then I went to Austin for a week. And a couple of buddies flew down, and we toured all these super famous barbecue joints, and I met Daniel Vaughn at barbecue summer camp, and he gave me a little tour guide for Central Texas. So we went to, you know, Pryde's and Smitty's and Black's and Lockhart's.
Of course.
Went to my favorite Louis Miller's in Taylor, Texas, and so also good. Snow's I love, because Snow's is only open Saturday morning from like 9 to 1 p.m. Like, how weird is that?
It's so crazy.
And they're voted number one in Texas, you know, twice in the last decade. So,
and it's a must-visit location. And you have Tootsie, who's such a doll, an amazing person.
Right. They make Yeti commercials with her. Fun.
Exactly.
You know? She's still a Yeti. Like, she's hoisting big, you know, ice chest full of meat around.
Yeah,
you know?
She's reaching in, grabbing the pork.
So after that, I came back to Seattle, started doing barbecue parties. I actually thought about it. I thought, I don't like food trucks. I'm not like, you know, stand in a little box. I'm 6'4", right? Handing meat out through a little square hole and not really.
Yeah, that's not.
You know, and in Seattle, like, even being a customer, standing in the drizzle, eating a sandwich, it's just like, I wanted to throw parties. I'm a party guy. So I actually discovered a guy, Daniel, just forgot his last name, from Brooklyn.
Krieger?
Daniel
Krieger?
No. Oh. Shoot, I just spaced out on his name. He went to Austin years ago, and he was doing a little film documentary on Aaron Franklin, like 10 years ago. And he went, oh, my God, this is good stuff. And so He bought one of Aaron Franklin's old smokers.
He had Brisket King or something? Oh, no, he had
Brisket Laboratory.
Brisket Laboratory, yeah.
And that thing, so he went back to New Jersey or New York and Brooklyn, but he smoked the meat one someplace. But he created this thing called Brisket Laboratory. Uh-huh. He said, I'm going to try to recreate the Central Texas barbecue experience here in New York. If you want to be on my mailing list, I'm going to have a series of short.
I remember that, yes.
Of events, a short series of events, you know, maybe you'll get in. And everybody thought, wow, that's cool. Like everybody.
That was so early. And I completely forgot about. Thank you for reminding me. I forgot about that guy. Yeah.
Yeah. And he, like, I had a friend who lived in Brooklyn, and she was from Texas, and she sent me an email that she got, like, look at this. Doesn't this sound cool? I'm like, cool for you. Like, I'm not going to show up to events in New York, you know. Daniel Delaney.
Exactly. Yeah. Delaney's
Barbecue. And so he, you know, did them weekly, and they sold out. It was $25. You get a pound of brisket, and you hire a little band and have events. It just was like everybody wanted to go. He sold out. So he actually sold, I want to say, he said, I'm only going to have 1,500 tickets or something. He sold 2,500 tickets in like 2 weeks. He made like $65,000 before he started cooking.
Oh, man.
And I went, that's the business model.
That's the crazy business model.
That's why the hell wouldn't you do that? So I heard about him. I called him and said, hey, can I just completely clone your idea? Because I think it's brilliant. He says, hell yeah. And he told me the website where you'd set it up. And I had pictures of me with Aaron Franklin and Tootsie and all these people in Central Texas. And I did the same thing. I wanted to recreate the Central Texas barbecue experience here in the Northwest.
Oh, wow. Interesting. I didn't know this really.
On a monthly basis, and I'd go to a brewery and say, hey, can I bring 100 people here to drink your beer? And they're like, hell yeah, you can do that.
Of course.
I'd say, cool. And I'd rent tables and chairs and hire a band. And the first band I had was the Pornados, and they did West Coast surf guitar music.
That's cool.
Oh, that's it rad. Was way cool.
That's rad.
And I smoked all the meat in my backyard, and I had my wife and friends made the side dishes. And we would do these events. I did a monthly. And the first one barely sold out right before the event. The next one sold out in like 3 weeks. The next one, 2 weeks. The last one, you know, the 14th one sold out in like 9 minutes. By that time, I had such a following. They would just sell out like hotcakes. I had a mailing list. But that one sold out on Twitter because by that time, like Sir Mix-a-Lot, who lives in Seattle, was chasing me on Twitter. And one of the local big restaurateurs in town was like on board, and so it's just kind of like hot, you know, and fun.
Interesting. Totally. Wow, fun. That's so unique. I didn't know this part of the story. This is awesome.
Yeah.
This is awesome.
Yeah, I had never even worked in a restaurant. I had no intention of opening a restaurant. It sounded horrible to me. Everybody who ever owned a restaurant had nothing good to say about it.
So then did you think, okay, I want to open a restaurant? Or because you said, you everyone that had a restaurant was miserable. What made you decide to open a restaurant?
Well, I'd been at Microsoft long enough that I think I was tired of that. They were tired of me. Actually, what I was doing, I went and said, well, I was doing this illegally in my backyard. You need a commissary and all this stuff. So I went and started looking at commissaries, and they were like $2,000 and up a month to rent to do these kind of things. I'm like, well, maybe I can just rent a little restaurant, like a tiny place. Maybe even like Snow's, just open on Saturdays.
Oh, that's smart. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, use that.
Find a diner that's open Monday through Friday and just say, hey, I'll rent it from you, you know, one day a week, and I'll just have a Saturday night barbecue party at some place and put my toes in the water. And I found a place that was for rent, but it was kind of a big place and run down. It was a dive bar, and but big, like 150 seats. And they were going to rent to me for cheap because the guy that was in there wasn't paying rent. They were just like, they didn't want somebody to spray paint the place. And I don't know. It was a little old couple, and they were just kind of done with it. And then some strip joint and some punk rock clubs wanted to buy it. And the little old owners, they'd owned it when it was a nice Italian restaurant, you know, back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. And they said, why don't you buy it and make it a nice restaurant again? You know, they didn't want it to become a strip joint or a whatever. And so I got a bunch of buddies together, and we all chipped in and we bought it. I said, what the hell? Give it a try. And so because of that events that I had done, the day we opened, we had a line out the door. So we were in the black in like 2 months.
What was the year?
That was 5 years ago, 2014.
2014?
Fall of 2014, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So since then, it's been fun. You know, it's a lot of work. Like restaurants are a lot of work. I tell people I've aged like a president. Like you look at Obama or Bush,
Obama turned gray so fast.
8 years later, it's like, who's that?
He looked like a different guy. I know. I always wondered when Obama first started. Like, when is he going to start looking old? And then at the end, sure enough, he looked like he had been a seasoned politician for sure.
That's the restaurant business too. It'll age you.
Well, without a doubt. Now, did you have a pit from Texas?
I did. I had one. The one that I'd used in my backyard and for those events, I actually bought in Seattle from some restaurant that was getting complaints for their neighbors for smoke being in the air, right? And so I had a big one built. Aaron Franklin was going to build it for me. He and I'd met him at his restaurant at barbecue summer camp, and we were trading emails, and he wanted to make them. He likes making pits, right? And now he has a pit company.
He's gonna make
but
those
he
home, like home ones or something, I think.
I was gonna have him make me a big one like he has at his place. He was always busy or something, or maybe next month, da 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 da. So I found a guy north of Houston. I'm not gonna say his name out loud, because last time I did, four people from Seattle ordered one of his pits, and he put me at the back of the line, and I had to wait extra a few
Yeah,
months.
don't say it. It's okay.
I don't want to make him so famous I can't afford him anymore, or get on his list. But he made a pit, and it's probably better. Aaron's pits, I think, how I'll have just one shelf in them for the meats, right? And I've got mine have three shelves because we smoke a lot of meats,
Oh, wow.
and I have three of them now, so we have nine shelves
A
cooking.
1,000 gallon?
Yeah, you know those ones that are, yeah, the 4 foot wide
Yeah.
ones and 20 feet long. So it's got four chambers, four separate sets of doors that you open.
Do you cook at? Do you only cook at one of? Because you have two locations or three locations? Am I?
we have three locations
Yeah.
plus some catering. So we smoke about 4 to 5 tons of meat a week right now.
Wow,
It's a
that's
lot.
a
It's
decent
a
amount of
lot. It's
meat.
a mountain of meat. And it's funny because we hire people to work the pits, and we've got several people that are like rock stars, but other people, we're trying to hire another one right now. Most people can't handle it. I couldn't handle it. It's like you've got to be a strong man. You're picking up boxes, and you're out there summer and winter,
Yeah, and
and you're
those doors are
doing
heavy. Those I had in Texas, I would lift them, and they're heavy. They're
it. Yeah, I mean and everybody thinks they want to work in the pits. Every guy in America wants to, like, yeah, I want to work at a barbecue joint.
Yeah, of course, it's
They don't want to do
romantic.
that. They want to be like me. They want to own a barbecue joint. They want to walk out there with a cigar and throw a log on the fire and talk to brisket with people and trim a few every now and then and squeeze a few every now and then. But the guys who actually work out there, 8 to 12 hours a day, man, that's a tough job. And it's not, and they're what you really want are butchers, guys like factory hardened guys who can really, just crank that stuff out. That's hard work.
Yeah, because there's a lot of that trimming, all that. There's a lot of work involved. So, what was your menu like when you first opened?
Just identical to every Central Texas barbecue joint. It's brisket, ribs, and sausage, which is the Texas Trinity.
Yeah.
And we have that on our menu too, is you can get all three as that. And we do chicken and pulled pork.
Okay.
We do beef ribs once a week. We do prime rib once a month. And we smoke crazy stuff. Like, we smoked a whole alligator for our anniversary in September, which is fun. And we have an annual music festival called the Low and Slow Festival. We just started this year with a bunch of bands. We own the parking lot. We actually bought the building that we're in.
Oh, that's cool.
The investors, I mean, I'd never even worked in a restaurant. They were like, why would anybody invest in me to open a restaurant, right? But we bought the land. So if you buy a piece of property in Seattle, it's
That's
not a bad
smart.
investment. And if the restaurant works out, great. If it doesn't, then you've got a piece of
It's
land.
Seattle, yeah.
Yeah, it's already, gone up in price,
Yeah.
since we bought it.
Are you guys making your own sausage?
We're not. We're buying it. We used to have a local guy make it. And he was kind of irascible, and we found a guy in Texas, the Syracuse meat company
Oh, cool.
in Ponder, Texas, and they make a really delicious cheddar jalapeno sausage that we love, and a regular, kind of Polish traditional, mesquite smoked sausage that we love too. So they ship that to us.
Nice, that's perfect. No, that's perfect.
We would like to make sausage sometime, but you need like a cold room. You need space, and you need it's you know.
You need a lot of space.
Yeah, and our waste isn't that much. It's not like we have a ton of trim and stuff. We have, like, we make more briskets than we should every day, and then the next day, the briskets are still fine. You leave them in an Alto Sham, they're just like brand new, and we make breakfast tacos out of them.
Oh, excellent.
And we make up, nobody's really doing breakfast tacos in Seattle, and we make, you know, a lot of them now, and brisket and that cheddar jalapeno sausage. And
oh, so good.
They're good. They're real good. And if we have leftover after that, we make chili out of it. So we've got like this fancy, you know, double R ranch, you know, choice or prime smoked brisket chili, which it, you know, can't beat that.
That's so great. The two other locations, when did they open up?
They opened up this year. We opened a place in South Lake Union, which is the neighborhood just south of downtown that's north of downtown, I'm sorry, that's filled with Amazon buildings and Google and Microsoft and biotech companies. It's like crazy land down there. And I did it because I have a friend who's has a building there, and he just loves Jack's Barbecue. And so we went in with him like that. And it's great. You know, it's not the same because it doesn't have the pits there. We smoke everything in the tough part of town. We schlep it down there. You couldn't burn wood downtown 20 hours a day.
No.
And Amazon, you know, all those workers, they're funny. Like, I was just there at lunch. It's Friday, and that place is like you hit an ant hill at lunchtime. I mean, you are packed. And then between 2 and 5, there's nobody there because they're all back at work. And then it's like you ring a bell. After 5, they all start drifting in for happy hour and stuff like that, and it gets busy again.
How big is that location? How many seats?
That place is only 50 seats.
Okay.
So it's small. And then we have another place in the tallest building in Seattle, the Columbia Tower, which used to be the tallest building west of the Mississippi until recently when some place in L.A. built a tower just a little taller than it.
And I think San Francisco is going to beat it. I think I remember reading something in the L.A. Times about that, yeah.
Maybe it's in San Francisco.
No, they're not there yet, I think.
That place is just a food court, a small operation.
Oh, cool.
Which is kind of fun because it's more traditional. Our other restaurants, we have waiters. You know, we sell beer and margaritas and everything. And that place is just like you go up and order your barbecue and we slice it, like each order takes like 30 seconds and we give it to you and you go away. So it's lean and mean and very predictable, and it doesn't have all the shenanigans of liquor licensing. And
how has that one done? Has it been pretty busy?
Yeah, same. And it's very consistent. So that one's really good. It's not a big operation, not a big money machine or anything like that, but it's just, we can make so much meat at our current location. It's kind of the hub and spoke model. Like, you get one big place where you can crank it out, and you can have other little places around town that not only are good for, extending the availability to customers, but also the delivery services, which is becoming a bigger part of everybody's food business.
It's an interesting component. I haven't really talked to many people about that, but I've noticed at different places where they'll have like 7 tablets. It could be
insane. We have 7 tablets, and we get asked by the delivery services to create ghost restaurants, and that's where they said, why don't you guys create a Mexican restaurant and make Mexican food and just sell it out of your barbecue joint? You can call it a different name. You can call it anything you want. It'll just be a restaurant that sells Mexican food, and we'll put it on our availability for delivery, and people will come, you know, our drivers will come to you and pick it up. If you don't want to do Mexican, pick anything you want. You can have 12 restaurants. You can have 12, you know, ghost restaurants in one restaurant if you want.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you think about it, you know, it's been so hard to hire cooks in America because everybody's cooking. Like, every grocery store has a ton of food going out. Every business has a cafeteria. Yeah, Microsoft office has a big restaurant, you know. Nobody wants to cook at home anymore, right? Everybody wants to eat out.
That's true. The delivery services are just massive. Like, it's such a big deal. That's interesting. So if you fall in love with a restaurant, it could be that they don't exist, that they're not even real.
Right. Right.
That's weird. That starts to fall into like an interesting category of like, get your brain.
It's like the movie where the guy fell in love with his Alexa.
Uh-huh.
app, yeah. And his in his phone or whatever.
Yeah, it was like what her? I think it was her. That, yeah, where yeah. she? Yeah, I was yeah. thinking about that like a month ago. That was such an interesting movie. It was really a unique thing, and he created a relationship. But she was a computer, so she had relationships with like a million people across the world.
Right, right. But he didn't want to think that. He
no.
wanted to think, well, there's a piece of you. There's some code written off. Die, that's just for me, right? We got a thing here, right?
So sad.
You should have lied.
Definitely. Well, don't you have other events too? Because I think I've saw. Does Aaron come up there every so often? Or do you guys cook at something?
He goes to Portland.
Is it Portland? Okay, that's where
yeah. There's a guy in Portland that's a clone of me, and his name is Rodney Muirhead.
For Podness?
Podness. And he grew up 30 miles from where I did in Texas, and he went to Texas A&M like I did, and he moved to the West Coast like I did, had a corporate job, and he opened Podna's, and he was 8 years before me. And I remember hearing about him, and I went there. When I said I was going to open a restaurant, I went down there to visit him and say, hey, you got to tell me, like, where do I put stuff in the kitchen? Like, I don't know nothing about this business. And our menus are identical. They're meat, sides are coleslaw, potato salad,
beans.
Yeah, beans, and we do a Texas caviar, which is an old family recipe I've eaten all my life.
Black-eyed peas?
Chilled black-eyed peas, the millennial peppers cut up, and so mac good. And cheese. So I just said, how do I do this? And we sat at the Doug Fir bar in Portland, and he laid out the kitchen design for me and everything. And it was kind of funny when I first met him, because I'm way outgoing, and he's not as much. And I go to this restaurant, and I'm like, hey, tell Rodney Jack from Seattle's here, and we come on, we open up a barbecue restaurant. We both went to Texas A&M. Blah, 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 and I'm like bouncing off the wall, and I see him peek around the corner, like, who the hell is this guy?
He's like, oh no.
Some damn Aggie family. I moved to the West Coast to get away from you, yahoos.
But maybe that's why. Like, I've reached out to him over a little while, and I've never heard back from him. He probably doesn't want to talk to anybody.
He's married with two little kids, and he's in the zone. And when you have two little kids in a business, I say you're in the zone. You kind of not, you don't come up for air very often.
Well, he also, I think he opened a Mexican place too, I think, or something.
Yep. Right on his same property. So he bought the land he's on too, and he opened a little Mexican place.
He is a clone. That's so weird.
Yep. I'm cloning him. I'm his clone. I'm following him. I'm thinking about a Mexican restaurant too, but anyhow, Aaron Franklin and him are buddies. Their kids are the same age and stuff. So he goes to Portland.
Okay.
And I've seen Aaron in town. I've said hello to him. I think he might remember who I am. He always acts like, once you know that many people, you just start saying, hey, yeah, good to see you.
Yeah, he does that with me too. That's him.
We all do it.
Yeah, exactly. We have to. Yeah. But he seems pretty genuine. He's a great ambassador for the barbecue world.
He's the best thing that ever happened to barbecue, because he took it up to this level mm-hmm. in such a nice, friendly, way, and no shyness about it. It's we smoke meats. There's no like super mystery, super secret sauce to it or anything like that. So he set the bar really high that we were all aiming for now.
Yeah.
And thank God, because barbecue is a hell of a lot better at that bar than it is at what's your favorite sauce to put on some piece of mystery meat.
Exactly. That's gray and scary and
Right. Right.
But didn't Robert Jacob Lerman come up there like a year ago? Or?
Yeah, his photography is beautiful.
So gorgeous.
Wyatt Spadden is the first of those guys, and I've got both of his books. On the shelf.
I can look through those books any day. I love them so much.
And photographers love barbecue because they'll come, and especially in the summer, in the early part of the morning, when the sky is that kind of royal, rich blue, the sun's just starting to come up, and you've got the fire, and you've got the smoke drifting out of the pits. It's like, for a photographer, that's like, nirvana. Like, yeah. They're just crazy. And Robert Lerma is really good. So he came up, hired him more or less to come up when we opened the restaurant in South Lake Union. Wayne Mueller, who's the grandson of Louis Mueller, he's a buddy, and he came up and opened the restaurant. We had a ceremony. He talked about the history of Texas barbecue, and who knows it better than a guy like him. Robert took pictures, and I thought, God, this is nice. Like, it's fun that I'm kind of connected with the barbecue posse in Texas, because that's where I'm from, and it's is what I'm doing here. It really helps with, you know, being authentic, mm-hmm. which is what people appreciate.
Well, and it shows that you care enough about it that you want to bring people up, like you want to bring Wayne out to greet people and talk to them because he's a great ambassador too at barbecue, and he's someone that
yeah.
So it kind of shows that you're not just, this isn't just a like a random restaurant. This is something you care about.
Right, right. And it's my tribe. You know, it's funny when you move away from home, you miss the people and the food. You know, you miss the whatever you grew up with, and now I've got this little group of folks. And that's why I go back to the Texas Foodways Symposium. It's all these people that grew up in the same kind of way I did. And we all have that kind of DNA at a certain level.
My friend that lives in Seattle, he was asking me, like a couple of months ago, I'm like, I'm surprised he never asked me where to go in Seattle for barbecue. And I mentioned Jack's, and he sent me a ton of photos. Because do you have a location? Like, do you have like some outdoor seating at one of them?
Yeah, we have a patio at Soto.
Yeah.
And it's cool. It's right next to the smokers.
Yeah. That's the photos he sent the food, and the food looked fantastic. Like, you're putting out great product. It was like a secret. He was secretly going in. It wasn't just me or something. It was really great.
Yeah. It's fun. People love it. It's funny. Barbecue is like the most soulful of soul foods. Like, people have opinion. Mm-hmm. I've met so many Southerners or people from Kansas City or Memphis or whatever, and they walk in the door and they've got this serious look on their face. They're like, my friends told me this is a good barbecue joint. Yeah, I've heard that a lot, you know. Like, what do you got? Like, you know.
Yeah, give it to me.
And then once they have it, if they like it, they're like, oh, my God, this is so good.
Exactly.
Because they're so often disappointed.
Oh, for sure. Especially with barbecue, I think, for sure. What are the hours for all the locations so people can know?
Well, it's from 11. Well, we serve breakfast tacos from 7 a.m. to either 9 or 10 a.m. Hmm. And then we have lunch and dinner from 11 to 8 or 9 p.m. 8 during the week and 9 on Fridays and Saturdays.
Are you selling out of stuff?
We do have an amazing brunch at South Lake Union just fun, because you get to do, you know, chicken fried steak and eggs, breakfast tacos, chilaquiles.
Oh,
we do brisket on a biscuit.
I love that.
And we'll make it a Benedict by putting a tomato and a hollandaise on it with a little minced jalapeno and the hollandaise. It's really good. Like, it's the best brunch, the best grits with a ton of cheese and peppers and stuff like that. And the cooks just, you know, they're cooks, right? And they want to go wild. So brunch, I said, let's go wild. So they just nailed it. So it's fun. That's my Southern meal. I've got. And then all the guys in the kitchen, you know, like the guy from Oaxaca is making me mole negra from Oaxaca.
Oh, that sounds so good.
I was just eating some chicken stew, you know, with tortillas. And so I've got my Mexican food and my barbecue and my Southern, my chicken fried steak on the weekend. So all I need now is some Gulf Coast seafood. I never have to go back to Texas again.
Yeah, you brought that to Seattle. That's amazing. That's fantastic.
It's been fun.
That's really cool. So that's just at the South Lake location?
Yeah. I mean, we have breakfast tacos and we have scrambled eggs and brisket and stuff like that at Soto as well. But the fancy, crazy brunch right now is in South Lake Union. We did a crazy, funny, all-up brunch in Soto at our original location years ago. But 2/3 of the people that came in said, can I just get ribs? Can I just get brisket? They just want barbecue. And we're like, hey, we got a fancy brunch. They're like, yeah, that's all really nice. That's cool. Can just give me a pile of meat, and some pickles. We're like, oh, okay.
But you got it.
We can pour holidays on it. They're like, no, that's cool.
So why do you think it worked better at the other location?
Well, this location at Soto is kind of an industrial neighborhood and people drive here.
Okay.
And it's kind of like, you know, they're going to eat barbecue. It's like a destination.
Yeah.
And they're going here because of barbecue. And South Lake Union's in the middle of a million apartment buildings and offices and stuff. And it's more like, I'm out. This is where I live. I'm walking down the street on Sunday morning. Brunch.
Bring a brunch. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, neighborhood's better for brunch, I think. So.
Oh, I want to try that too. Oh, in my heart, I want to move to the Pacific Northwest eventually, and it would be so great to live by your restaurant, at least one of them.
We're hiring guys to work in the pits.
I hear it's a pretty easy job.
Yeah.
Do I get to smoke a cigar and just watch them? Yeah, I know. These are.
Get in the gym.
I know. Hey, I have a gym here. I should use it. Yeah, definitely.
Where are you based?
I'm in Los Angeles.
What part of Los Angeles?
I'm in Woodland Hills in the San Fernando Valley.
Okay.
Yeah, like it's south, no, north, west of Los Angeles. I've lived all over. I lived in Texas for a year too.
I lived in West Hollywood for 1 year.
Did you?
Yeah, before barbecue, between gigs at Microsoft, I was a movie producer. My wife made a film about burlesque.
Oh, really?
And I went to UCLA Film School for 3 months and then got a deal for her movie. And it wasn't a moneymaker, but it was fun. And
cool.
I wasn't a real producer. You're living in LA making Pepsi commercials.
Yeah, exactly. Or music videos.
And I didn't know what I was doing. I came back to Seattle.
Do you think you'll be headed to Texas soon? Anytime soon?
I'm going to Texas in 2 weeks for the Texas Monthly Barbecue Festival. I'm going there. I'm taking some people who are regulars at my restaurant. I actually had a fundraiser this year. I'm raising money to build a school in Mexico.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah, on an island off the coast of Cancun, Isla Mujeres. And we had a fundraiser. In fact, if you want to donate to that, you can go to jacksbbq.com.
Okay, I'll put a link to everything. That's a good idea.
A place to click. And we raised $40,000 one night at an auction at the restaurant.
Which oh, that's so great.
For a one-off deal. And one of the auction items was go to Central Texas with Jack and tour all the famous barbecue joints.
Oh, so, that's going to be so fun.
So I got an Airbnb. I've got tickets to the festival. We're going to go to Louis Miller's and Snow's and all the places we mentioned. You know, City Market at Prowse.
City Market, yeah, that's so good.
Those places are just like temples of barbecue. They've just been there for 100 years. And they're just
trapped in time, yeah.
Yeah, and I never get tired of going and doing that. It's just that's the roots of everything we're doing. It's just it's so fun to show it to people. So
that's phenomenal. That's really
good.
I'll
be back, and I might go shoot a wild boar with my brother or my friend because they've got so many of them. They're like begging you to do it. Like they're just rampant. They're not natural. They're destroying all the farmland.
Yeah, they are. I've heard bad things.
Yeah. So I thought, well, how fun would that be? Go harvest some fresh pork.
Oh, that is so great. I'm so excited for what you're doing. I can't wait to go visit you. And what an interesting story. I'm so glad that we talked because I didn't know your entire story. So this is phenomenal.
Yeah, it's just a lot of fun, and it's going to be fun. You know, we're looking at one or two more locations maybe, and then settle down and just enjoy it all. You know, spend more time sitting by the fire, smoking cigars, throwing a log on.
Well, excellent. Well, I'm gonna be up in a couple of months, so I'll shoot you an email before.
Absolutely.
I'd love to tour all the locations, but and film there too.
Yeah, no, that'd be a lot of fun.
That's cool.
Wait for that.
That's awesome. Well, have a great day. Have a good weekend. Thank you so much for talking to me.
Oh, my pleasure. Say hello to the sunshine in Los Angeles for me.
And say hello to Daniel when you're out there in 2 weeks.
I will. I'm gonna give him a shout.
All right. Take care.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Bye, Jack. Thanks, sir.